This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Best songs, Pretty Woman. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, March the 30th, marching on in March. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure bill and how it could hurt infrastructure. Not help it. So stay tuned for that. And the new CDC director, that Center for Disease Control, the new director warning of impending doom with the so-called recent hike in virus cases. Meantime, Republicans are launching an attack on House Bill SR1, the so-called election reform bill. We're going to talk about both of those things and more with the proprietor of the Barber Poll himself, Andrew Sorace. Later in the show, stay tuned for that if you would. And a new Gallup poll is out. It shows church membership at an all-time low for the first time, below 50%. We are going to examine that and talk about it. Quite an eye-opener. And in our ultimate top 10, yesterday we gave you the top 10 most dangerous American cities this year. Turnabout being fair play, today the top 10 safest American cities in 2021. By the way, we are sponsored here at Freedom Works by Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. And you can go there from Tuesday through Saturday, 8:30 to 5 during the week, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 o'clock. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. All right. So we got a lot going on. I noticed I turned on C-SPAN this morning, and they're focusing on the George Floyd trial, and they wanted people to call in and, you know, comment on the way the trial is going. And I just kept thinking that they are, it's a terrible situation. It looks to me like the police officer that is kneeling on the neck of George Floyd is at fault, and I think he's going to pay a penalty for that, as he should. But there are more black people killing white people in this country than there are white people killing black people. But we spotlight one group over another rather than showing that both groups have problems, or not showing it at all as groups. And I get a little tired of that. I think a lot of people do. You can show George Floyd being killed by a policeman, and then you can show those two women that killed that Muslim guy in his car. It was terrible what happened to him, but you never hear about it. I guess it's whatever the current agenda is for the mainstream press. Right now, one of their many issues is white-on-black crime, and anytime somebody white hurts somebody black, you're going to hear a lot about it. It's wrong to hurt or kill anybody, and we got to get race out of this thing. And the other thing about all of that, hate crimes, which is a racial kind of a thing, somehow you can look into somebody's soul when he's killing somebody and determine whether or not he's killing that person because of the color of their skin. I'm not sure. I think all crimes of passion and murder are hate crimes. When you kill somebody regardless of their color, to me that's a hate crime. In the meantime, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention director, her name is Rochelle Walensky. Yesterday they had a White House briefing and she warned of impending doom. She used those terms, those words, impending doom amid a rise in coronavirus cases. She appeared to hold back tears as she said the U.S. could soon bear witness to a fourth surge. Well, I don't know. I always kind of like it when your leaders will tell you the things, you know, let's not panic. I think you feel a little bit better about things. You want to hear things that are going to calm you. You don't want somebody to get up in front of a microphone and go, oh, my God, we're all going to die.
But she was crying yesterday, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, between her and Fauci, I mean, it's no longer the CDC. It's more of like a theater group between all the flip-flopping that he does, you know, and him claiming responsibility for getting this whole COVID thing going. I mean, the vaccine going, taking the...
That really surprised me when Fauci kind of came out with that little nugget.
About 2 weeks after he was, you know, introduced to him, there was something that rubbed me wrong about the guy. And then about a month later, I started to see Trump, whenever he'd stand behind him, like he was like letting him go, but wanted to really smack him in the head, you know, because he just... And then things really fell apart.
There was an ego waiting to get out during the Trump administration, and perhaps the ego made its way out from Fauci during the Biden administration. It does seem like he's busting his buttons.
And then
a
he puts
bit
a book
more.
Out before we're even, before we're even
still
over.
Still in
this
the midst of this.
It's ridiculous.
So, it seems like overall, maybe it's because people are getting more used to the pandemic, but it does seem like we're coming out of it. And almost all the numbers do show that. Cases are going down. It's not over yet, but people kind of have picked up on how to conduct their lives, and we're still very optimistic. I think the CDC director, instead of bursting out in tears and saying impending doom, could have termed it a little bit better, made us feel a little bit better about ourselves. Here in Florida, I think this state is doing about as well as any state is doing in terms of how we are handling it. And we've got a governor that just, I don't know, he exudes optimism, but he also exudes like he's in control, you know?
Well, I think she was referring to the numbers spiking a little bit in Michigan in this
and
past week or two. But
in different places,
I mean,
from time to time.
You've lived in the snow. There's times a year where you just kind of hunker down.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, January and February are those months. And the people get cabin fever after that, and they start to get out and they mingle. And I think that's the result that you're seeing.
Yeah, I think so, too. We talked about the people kind of, you know, their energy coming out, for instance, going to the beach, you know, and just they're finally out and about. And it's like, you know, just like you said, it's cabin fever. And so a lot, and they're young kids, too. And of course, they're going to be a little bit more energetic and exuberant, too. But, you know, overall, this country is doing a pretty doggone good job handling this thing. And indeed, I still think we have to watch out for the very treacherous Chinese, the government of China, and the way this thing made its way around the world. So I think we're doing the best we can right now. We'll see where all of it goes. We're coming out of it one way or the other, and that's the way we feel. All right, we're going to take our break, and when we come back, Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute, we're going to talk about Joe Biden's infrastructure program.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon. She crawled in and took control.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Philly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Philly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is marine wildlife artist and conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Philly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Tuesday, Freedom Works. We're so glad you are with us, and we're delighted to have back Chris Edwards from the Cato Institute, where Chris is Director of Tax Policy Studies. And a week ago, in the Washington Examiner, he wrote a piece, Biden's Anti-Infrastructure Plan. And he talks a little bit about how this infrastructure bill of the Democrats, which will be funded by tax hikes, will in fact damage infrastructure, not help it. Chris, welcome back. Very interesting piece that you wrote. And also the point that you made, which I think people should realize, is that while the federal government owns less than half of the infrastructure they're involved in, they have extensive control over it. Tell us a little bit about what's going on right now.
That's right. When people, usually politicians talk about infrastructure and people sort of assume that the government owns most of it, but the opposite is true. If you think about most of the infrastructure in America, it's power stations and freight railways and pipelines and broadband networks. That's all owned by the private sector. So my piece breaks down the data, and the vast majority of infrastructure in America is owned by the private sector. Think about the hundreds of billions of dollars that companies like AT&T and Verizon are putting into broadband networks, for example. So, you know, Biden comes in and says he wants to spend more money on things like high-speed rail, but he would hike taxes on businesses, which would damage investment in broadband and all the other great stuff that the private sector does. So, you know, his tax hikes, for example, by one estimate, would reduce private infrastructure by over $1 trillion.
Oh, really?
So, you know, and then his labor regulations and green regulations would further damage private sector infrastructure. So that's why I call Biden's plan an anti-infrastructure plan, not an infrastructure plan.
You know, I've always worried about the government, the federal government, lording over all the different states who know better what infrastructure problems and things they have. And you know, when they send you money from the federal government, there's always a set of rules about how you can use it. Well, they don't know, and it's a one-size-fits-all kind of thing, isn't it, with their philosophy on how you can handle the money? And then there's the idea that taxing, however the Democrats want to figure out how, if they're going to spend like $2 trillion on infrastructure, we're not going to get it back in taxes. You know, they're not going to pay for it.
Yeah, the one giant question that reporters never ask federal politicians when they talk about infrastructure is, well, if it's highways or schools or airports, state governments own all those assets. So why wouldn't states be investing, you know, the optimal amount in those assets? The states can raise their own taxes and user fees anytime they want. And indeed, over the last 5 years, half the states have raised their own gas taxes to fund their own highways. So why do we need, additional you know, federal money in there. Money doesn't grow on trees. If Texas or Ohio want wider highways, or they want more money in their transit systems or airports, well, they can. There's no reason why they can't do that themselves. And indeed, they are investing themselves. So this question is never asked. Like, why do we even need federal intervention?
Right.
The answer is we don't.
That's exactly.
All, you know, all these assets are either owned by the private sector. The most of the rest of the assets are owned by state and local governments. I mean, for example, the entire interstate highway system is owned by state governments. So if your interstate has potholes in it, well, then you should complain to your state government, and your state government can handle that. We don't need federal intervention.
We're talking with Chris Edwards. He wrote a piece a week ago in the Washington Examiner. You can find it, I think, on the Cato website right now, Biden's anti-infrastructure plan. And Chris, why are the Democrats doing this? If I think most people would say you're right. So why are the Democrats doing this? They want to look good with voters. They think that they can fool people.
I think it's just that both parties in recent years think that spending is free, and they think it's just it's sort of a political freebie just to spend money, because it appears that all the spending is costless. You know, you mentioned the CDC director yesterday talking about supposed doom from COVID. Well, in fact, we're in a fiscal doom cycle with our federal budget. This year, the federal government will spend $6.8
trillion. Oh,
boy. That is double the amount that they'll raise in taxes at $3.4 trillion. It's completely crazy what's going on in Washington with all the spending. So I think that's what it is. Biden comes into office. Biden doesn't really believe in anything. Let's face it. He seems to believe in labor unions. But other than that, he just wants to do something. And I think a lot of these politicians, they want to do something. Spending appears to be free. So they just want to spend a lot of money.
You know, I'm thinking while you're talking.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right. I'm thinking while you're talking, Obama doubled our national debt, correct, during his 8 years? Am I right about that? He doubled the debt. We went from about 10.
That's probably right, from about 30 to 60% of the GDP.
We went from like about 10 trillion when he came into office to about 20 trillion when he left. So we doubled the national debt. And then Trump comes in, and he's a populist kind of guy, and he. Money is the same kind of, he's spending money too, like a drunken sailor. Not that he didn't have some ideas. And now we got.
That's right. I'm putting a new chart up at Cato today, looking at budget deficits since the end of World War II. And every decade, the deficits have got bigger and bigger and bigger. So this isn't a recent phenomenon.
No.
It's that politicians have become increasingly irresponsible. Every decade, every generation of politicians in Washington have become more irresponsible on both sides. And, you know, this is going to end in some kind of giant financial crisis, high inflation, high interest rates. It will crush the nation's economy and future young generations who are going to have to dig out of this. So it's a terrible direction we're going in.
But the thing is that people don't see the consequences. We've been raising the debt, you know, year after year after year, and now we're raising it at, you know, just, you know, at light speed, and people don't see any consequences. They hear that, oh, the grandchildren will pay for it. Or inflation, and yet they're not experiencing, you know what I mean? They're not experiencing any pain. So they're just kind of apathetic about it, don't you think?
I agree with that, but I'm telling you, the pain is coming.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The pain is coming. But here's the other thing. With Obama's spending, infrastructure spending, whether he funds it by taxes or more debt, I think it's damaging because, you know, as you pointed out, with all the federal spending comes all these top-down regulations on green stuff and labor unions. Biden wants to impose new labor union regulations on all this new highway money and transit money coming from Washington. So that will damage infrastructure, make infrastructure spending less efficient. So this is why it's much better to fund this stuff either at the state or local level or in the private sector. When the federal government evolves, you get big cost overruns, you get a lot of more wasted money, and there's no need for the federal government to get involved in a lot of this infrastructure.
Again, we're talking with Chris Edwards. He's Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Chris, is Biden, are the Democrats getting any pushback from the governors about this thing at all?
Well, you know, the so far, you hear people say, well, infrastructure is bipartisan, and a lot of the big business lobbies, like the Chamber of Commerce, I think are very, very misguided and naive in supporting a big infrastructure package, because, you know, the Biden administration is saying now it's going to come along with a giant tax increases, which are going to crush all those businesses that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce supposedly represents. So, and I think a lot of moderate Democrats aren't going to want these tax hikes. Certainly Republicans aren't going to want them. I'm hoping that no federal infrastructure package passes. We don't need it. States can do this themselves. We don't need, Biden's got all these new subsidies for private infrastructure like broadband. Well, we don't need that.
Right.
We don't want more corporate subsidies.
Exactly.
For welfare. Corporations should fund their own infrastructure. States should fund their own infrastructure. We don't need this new federal imposition. And I'm hoping that, you know, especially when Biden talks about hiking taxes, a couple $1 trillion, which sounds like the administration wants to for this infrastructure package, I think that'll put a block in the highway or a block in the railroad tracks on this package.
Wow. Well, you know, and I think governors, you know, when you dangle money in front of a state, say, here you go. But you know, along with this, here's what you got to do. I mean, it's very tempting here, even in Florida. You know, Governor Ron DeSantis, who tends to be, I think, somewhat libertarian and conservative, but they don't want to turn down that money. You know, so all the states, maybe the governors are going along with it, even Republican governors. I don't know. But like you say,
they ought to wake up and realize that nothing from Washington is free.
Yeah, exactly.
If DeSantis has got to realize any more money he gets from Washington, people in his state are ultimately going to have to pay for it through higher taxes. And then his highway agency and his transit agencies are going to have to deal with a vast amount of new labor and green regulations coming from Washington. He doesn't want that.
No.
So I think a lot of these conservative governors ought to stand up and realize they ought to wake up and smell the coffee. They're not going to get anything free from Washington. This is going to be very, very costly on them and their state infrastructure agencies.
So with this infrastructure program, I mean, are the Republicans, they're probably going to rally and say that this is a big spending, you know, like they did with the other package, you know, the earlier package, that this is a big spending boondoggle. But I wonder if they, you know, when push comes to shove, are they really that vehemently opposed to it? Are they just winking at each other? Do we have to, I mean, what? How are we going to stop this kind of thing?
You know, since the early 90s, the central core of the Republican Party they've been bad on spending and deficits, just like the Democrats. But the central core holding the party together has been resistance to tax hikes. And I think that still holds. And I think that they will resist this infrastructure package when it comes with income tax and all kinds of other tax increases. So, again, I'm hoping that there is no federal infrastructure packages. If potholes on highways need filling, state governments can do that. We don't need a federal takeover an increasing federal takeover of a lot of this infrastructure.
Well, Chris Edwards, I'm so happy people like you are around to write things like this and talk about it. I mean, at least it tells me there's some sanity in Washington somewhere with all of the stuff that is going on. I want to thank you so very much for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. See ya.
All right, Chris. Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. All right. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we talked about the CDC director screaming about the problems and the doom with the recent hike in the virus cases. And meantime, Republicans launching an attack on this House bill that is an so-called election reform bill. Going to talk about that and other things with the proprietor of the barber pole himself, Andrew Ceraci.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tan Talk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Okay, we are back. By the way, we are around every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on the great Tan Talk Radio Network. I and Big Ed, we've been doing this thing for quite a while now. We kind of like doing it with you. But if you can't listen to us live, Ed puts all our shows on podcast, which means that all you have to do is go to ourfreedomworks.com, that's the website, and look up at the top, and there's the podcast button, and click on it, and away you go, ourfreedomworks.com. Well, Republicans are launching a big attack, a full-court press, you might say, against congressional Democrats' election and campaign finance reform bill. It's called SR1. And they're calling it the Republican Stop the Grab, Stop the Fraud. Now, this has to do with curtailing what states can do for voting irregularities and making sure that the voting in each of the states is honest. That's really kind of what it's all about. So they are running spots in the states where there was all kinds of concern. Arizona, Georgia, Nevada. Also in New Hampshire right now, four states they hope to flip from blue to red in another year during the midterm election. So we got the proprietor of the Barber Poll with us, as he is with us every show at this time. And Andrew, Republicans are kind of worried about this SR1. I don't know that it has that much of a chance. It would have to pass a filibuster in the Senate, but it would do, I think, a lot of damage and force states to all of a sudden stand in line to the whims of the federal government when it comes to voting.
Well, Paul, that's going to be a disaster, because the way I understand that bill is they automatically register everybody in the country to vote, whether they're in jail, whether they're illegal aliens, if they got an address, they're going to send them that they're registered to vote.
Well, that's not the intent of it. I'm sure that that's a lot of let's put it this way. They're going to allow a lot of fraud if they take over each of the states. The states are responsible for their own integrity, you know, right now. And that's the way that we set up this country. The state,
well, Paul, they already got away with a lot of fraud.
Yeah, I mean, when you start losing,
would it be any different?
Well, you know, exactly. When you start losing control of the actual physical vote, and we do it through the mail, we start losing control. Now we're assuming that people are going to be honest. If you mail out all of these ballots all over the country, you know, to different post office addresses, we're assuming people are going to be honest, that all people are going to be honest, that somebody isn't going to figure out a way to take a lot of those ballots and use them for nefarious purposes?
They already figured out a way to do it.
Yeah.
They did it the election of 2020.
Yeah. So
again, you know, the way I see it right now, with everything they're trying to propose, everything that's going on. You got that trial going on in Minnesota right now.
Yep.
You're going to see trouble caused by that. They made it all political. Okay, there was a truck driver that his truck was being attacked. I forgot what city it was.
You talking about the Muslim truck driver that, or whatever? Or no, that was an Uber driver, wasn't it? I can't remember.
That was an Uber driver that got killed. This truck driver was parked at a city somewhere, and Antifa and Black Lives Matter started attacking his truck, throwing stones in it, throwing rocks in it. He pulled a gun on him, and guess who got arrested?
He did?
Yeah. Okay, Paul. Then you got reparations now going on, $25,000 a piece in Illinois. You know, Paul, where we're headed?
In Evanston.
We are headed to a civil war, Paul.
Well, the Democrats are lighting the match to the war. They are lighting the grill, if you will. They're turning the propane on. By completely focusing on divisions, like... We got all this attention now on this trial, this George Floyd trial. I think that the guy that kept his knee down on George Floyd's neck has to suffer consequences. I don't think he's totally innocent on this. I don't.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
But now it's a projection of all police are bad people and black people need fear police. And yet the most dangerous thing to black people in these neighborhoods are other black people, unfortunately. Black-on-black crime.
In the neighborhoods, the blacks kill the blacks.
Black-on-black crime is the thing to worry about.
Right, and they're the ones causing it within themselves.
Well, the thing is that we won't address the truth. We won't stand up and say, okay, every once in a while you're going to have an issue with a policeman. But in the meantime, you're having hundreds of thousands of issues with blacks on blacks and crime. And why aren't we going to go and figure something out with that? I think it starts with the family unit. I think if we have to be honest and start saying, you know what, whatever we can do to strengthen the family unit, which is, the nucleus.
Today, that 70% of blacks born in this country are born out of wedlock, number one.
That's part of that's it. The nucleus of the family unit has fallen apart.
They destroyed it. Listen, we're living like animals in this country today. There's no more marriage. There's more kids all
Correct.
Born illegitimately.
There you go.
Everybody on welfare. They don't want to work. They
exactly.
Don't want to take care of the who made this happen, Paul?
We all are kind of guilty. We've let it go. I know the Democrats are the liberal, let's dance in the streets and flower children no responsibility. But we got to get back to responsibility. That's what we have to do.
This country is the laughing stock of the world right now, Paul. You got a president that doesn't know where he is. Okay, I can't wait till he starts pulling his executive orders on the gun laws. And he's going to try and do it. He's going to try to commit. What about the COVID passport? Where's your papers, please? Show me your papers.
The COVID passport.
This is Nazi Germany. Oh yeah, Biden's proposing a passport to prove you got COVID. You had your COVID vaccine.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Where are your papers? Yeah. This is Nazi Germany in 1930, Paul. No different.
Well, I always see traces of that, especially with the censorship. The censorship of people's thoughts, particularly, now that we've got the Wild West open internet with all of the different platforms, and all of a sudden, when there's somebody looking down on you from, the CEO's office or whatever it is, oh no, we'll allow this, but we won't allow this. Picking and choosing people's free speech. That's Nazi Germany.
Again, one question I have. How stupid are the American people to let this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, when Mr. Biden, and I won't call him president, when Mr. Biden starts trying to pull his executive orders with gun laws, I think you're going to see the attitude in this country really change, Paul. Because without guns, we are slaves. With guns, we're citizens.
Remember? Well, I don't see the Congress being able to overturn, to take away guns from people. I mean, even Democrats are shy away from that one. They talk a big game.
But when it comes
to legislation, you're not going to see them.
How many executive orders has he signed?
I know. Executive orders, but those things can be brought before a...
How many have been rebuffed? Look at the guys destroying the country with them, and nobody's fighting back with them.
Yeah, I think you're right to a certain extent, and I think we've got to take those to court, because I think that a lot of them are easily turned away, you know, because he's...
What about...
He's usurping the responsibility of the legislative branch.
Well, even the courts are fixed today. I'm sorry. Look at our Supreme Court. The other day, they turned down Hillary Clinton's email case.
I don't know about that one. Which email case?
I've been reading about it the last couple of days. They turned down her email case.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And look at Kavanaugh the other day. He ruled again with the Democrats. I forgot what it was. Our court system is even rigged, Paul. Mm-hmm. I do not trust anything going on in Washington.
Yeah. So you think the Supreme Court people are getting to these different justices? Is that what you mean?
Of course.
Oh.
Of course. Look at Kavanaugh and what's her name was put in to be so-called conservative.
Amy Coney Barrett.
They haven't done anything conservative yet. You tell me.
I'd have to look back at the cases. I could not make a good stand one way or the other on it. I know that you have to look at the specific case and see what they ruled on. Sometimes you'll hear that they ruled one way or the other, but then when you look and dig into the weeds of what was required of them as far as the actual parameters, you go, oh, you know what? We can't just make a generalization that this person did it for... You know what I mean? Sometimes the fabric of...
Our government is infiltrated, period. Mm-hmm. Our government in this country is a train wreck.
Yeah.
Anybody who doesn't see that is a fool.
So...
go ahead.
No, Andrew. Along that line, how do we do this peacefully? I mean, what do you think? What you're intimating is that people are gonna pull their guns out and go running into the streets. Well, but what are they going to do, you know?
There ain't nothing going to happen peacefully in this country anymore. We're beyond that, Paul.
Okay.
We crossed the line.
So what's the scenario? So people are going to, they've had enough, they're going to go out, we're going to start shooting people? Or what's going to happen?
You're going to see people start getting shot here eventually, Paul. I'm telling you.
Really?
Hey. That truck driver the other day, they arrested him when the other people were sitting there doing all the damage to his vehicle. He should have shot him. He would have got the same thing.
Yeah.
He should have shot him.
So that, and this particular case, where was it again?
I forgot the city. I was just reading about it a little while. I forgot.
No problem.
2 days ago.
Well, we certainly know that.
It's just like in Rochester, New York, the white man burnt to death by two black people you haven't heard a word about.
No, I haven't. I have never seen a story on
There's
that.
Enough of this crap, Paul. Mm-hmm. You will see a civil war, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Who, when, and where, it's going to happen.
On the COVID side of things here in Florida, do you sense, first of all, are you still pretty adamant about not getting that virus shot?
Paul, why would I get the shot with a 1% death rate?
Mm-hmm.
I got more chance of dying with that COVID shot than I do with the COVID.
Okay.
This whole COVID thing has been a scam right from the beginning. I still believe that. They're still crying their wolf, Paul. Let the country fall apart. That's all they're worried about.
Okay.
The government could take over.
So if you had somebody in your family, let's say you had your parents around, and would you instruct them, mom and dad, don't take the shot? Or how would you handle
it? If they're in their 80s and they got a little bit of something going on, don't forget the shot. What's the difference? I got 85-year-old people coming into my shop getting skin taken up because they have a pre-cancer melanoma. I got news for you. Why are you getting this done, going through all this baloney? By the time they would kill you, you're going to be 95 years old.
Okay.
It's a bunch of foolish stuff. It's nothing but a money-making business.
Okay. Yeah, so you're obviously, ignore it, right? Okay, I got gotcha. You.
That's it, Paul.
Yeah. I was thinking about
one person that died for this, supposedly COVID pneumonia.
You do?
Supposedly. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I know the guy that got killed on the motorcycle in front of my barbershop died of COVID.
What?
Oh, yeah, there was a guy on 580 about 4 months, 5 months ago, got killed.
Oh, I remember that. And you claim that they.
COVID.
You claim they listed his death as COVID when he gets killed on the highway?
That's right.
Really?
This is what I'm telling
you. I don't know how you get away with that.
If you people believe the news media, you believe Washington, D.C., you better hang it up. We're in this country at this time where you better have your guns, have a food supply, and take care of your own family.
Yeah. Well, there he is, Mr. Independent Master Barber, Andrew. And, Andrew, it's always a pleasure to talk with you about what is going on. I can't wait until Friday when we talk again. In the meantime, my friend, stay safe.
You got it, bud.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Andrew. The Master Barber, you know, he brings a lot of energy. And what do you think, Ed? You think we're going the same way? Oh, my goodness. All right, we're going to take our final break. And when we come back, a new Gallup poll. It shows church membership at an all-time low. We're going to talk about it.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Join Joe Pippin for Ask an Attorney Radio Show, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Ask an Attorney is Florida's longest running radio show for over 35 years now. So if you've got a question for an attorney, call Joe Pippin during his live radio show. Ask a question, get an answer, free of charge, of course. Saturday mornings, live from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Or to contact Joe Pippin directly, call 727-586-3306.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back to the final segments of Freedom Work. By the way, don't forget, you gotta listen to Good Morning Clearwater Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Because let Paul and Tracy Allen start off your day with the latest in news, the latest in entertainment. They'll talk a little sports. They're right on the cusp of what is going on. By the way, they also create beautiful posters and flyers and banners for you or your business. So give them a listen. Good Morning Clearwater. So, you know, the other day, Biden made Kamala Harris the person in charge of our border situation. Well, now it turns out that maybe exactly that isn't like what really she's going to do. In other words, she's now going to play a diplomatic role. And whenever you hear the term, I'm going to play a diplomatic role, it means that I'm going to sit back and do nothing but listen. In other words, I'm not going to do a damn thing. That's what Kamala Harris's job is morphing into. According to officials from her office, she will lead, quote, diplomatic efforts to engage Mexico and the Northern Triangle to address the root causes of migration, the root causes, and to oversee the flow and use of USAID. In other words, she's going to go around to these different places and go, oh, things are so bad here. How much money should we give you? Right? How much money should the United States give you to keep your people from coming over? Well, first of all, not going to stem the flow, no matter how much money you give to them. And do you think they're going to use the money to make things better and keep people in their countries? Are you kidding? Why do you think they're leaving these countries in the first place? Because there's so much corruption going on in those places. So now she's going to go around. Why doesn't she just go to the border and figure out something instead of going to all these different triangle countries and stuff? That drives me nuts. But that's what they're going to do, apparently. The comments from her office come after Biden last week appointed Harris to lead the efforts to address the surge in the migrants. Because it's something she's not going to do. No, I don't have time for that. I got to go to El Salvador and find out how much money do they want. All right. Now, as promised, the Gallup organization has been asking this question since 1937. And that is, what are you affiliated with a particular church? Well, for the first time, American membership in houses of worship has dropped below 50%. It's the first time it's ever dropped below 50% in Gallup's eight-decade trend. In 2020, 47% of Americans said they belonged to a church, a synagogue, or a mosque. Now, that's down from 50% in 2018 and 70% in 1999. So that's the way things are going. I looked on their chart, and around early 60s, our membership in churches and synagogues and mosques were probably at just about the highest point, early 60s. And then it started the decline at that point. Now, the decline in membership in a church, primarily a function, they say, of the increasing number of Americans who express no religious preference. Over the past two decades, the percentage of Americans who do not identify with any religion has grown from 8% in 1998 to 13% in 2008, and then 21% over the past 3 years. So it's going, obviously, the younger you are, the less chance that you are affiliated with the church. The older you are, the higher the chance. Let's see if I can find the age groups that they had in here. 66% of traditionalists, U.S. adults born before 1946. Did you know they were called traditionalists? I didn't. Adults now born before 46 belong to a church. 66% of them. That would be people 75 and older. And 58% of baby boomers, that's the next generation, 58% of baby boomers belong to a church. 50% of Generation X belong to a church, 36% of millennials. So, Ed, which group are you in of those? Are you the Generation X? No. Are you the millennial? Okay. So, 36% of millennials belong to a church. That's really, as opposed to like 58% of baby boomers. Mm. So it's really dropping. Each generation clearly dropping. Kind of interesting, isn't it? All right. Hey, before we go to our top 10, Ed, since we won't be doing a show until after the first game of the Rays, which I think is Thursday, right? So is it a home game for the Rays on Thursday? And who are they playing?
In fact, I believe their first six are on the road.
Okay.
I want to say six, and then they've got six at home.
Who's our ace pitcher this year? Yeah, that's all right.
Well, I think you're gonna have to go with Glass now. I think, you know, because with the trading of Blake Snell. Couldn't get his name out.
Yeah, right.
With the trading in Blake Snell
was a big big loss, wasn't it?
Yeah, towards the end of the year. Yeah, and that whole thing with him getting pulled in the World Series I knew that wasn't going to
right. fall. Right. I kind of remember that now. That was kind of an interesting decision, right?
Yeah, here it is. You got three on the road against Miami to open up the season.
Okay.
Three on the road in Boston. And then there'll be three at home with New York. And then and another four with Texas at home.
Okay.
So...
All right.
Six on the road.
Six on
home.
The road to start off with.
Yep.
All right. Time for our top 10, Ed. And as you know, yesterday we did the top 10 most dangerous American cities in 2021. It came from Neighborhood Scout. So we're going to do the top 10 safest American cities in 2021, also from American Scout. So here we go. Number 10 is Marshfield, Massachusetts. Now you got about 26,000 people in that place. Their crime rate per 1,000 residents is 4.0. All right. Number 9. I don't even know where this is. North Ridgeville, Ohio, with a population of 34,000. Your chances of being a victim there are only 1 in 275. I guess it's near Cleveland. Okay, fair enough. Number 8. Muskego, Wisconsin. They've got about 25,000 people there. Your chances of being a victim, 1 in 279. It's near Milwaukee. Number 7. Number 7 is Bergenfield, New Jersey. Okay. About 27,000 people live there. Chance of being a victim, 1 in 296. Number 6. Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Shrewsbury.
Yeah, I love it.
Where do you live? Shrewsbury.
I live in Shrewsbury.
Oh, come on.
You know where all the shrews are? They got to come from somewhere.
They're a Shrewsburyan.
They are indeed. 38,500 people live in Shrewsbury. 1 in 296 people get Shrewsbury.
How could anything go wrong in Shrewsbury?
Correct. Number 5. Lexington, Massachusetts. This is interesting. There's a lot of Northeastern ones up here. But Lexington, with 33,000 people, your chance of being a victim, 1 in 331. Number 4. Zionsville, Indiana. They've got 28,300 people. Your chance of getting knocked on the head or something, 1 in 345. All right. These are smaller towns. I thought they would be a little larger. Anyway, here we go. Number 3. Milton, Massachusetts. Good old Milton. It's near Boston, by the way. 27,500 people. Chance of being a victim there, 1 in 367. Number 2. Now, this is interesting. Long Beach, New York. Long Beach, New York.
Hmm.
Is it because there's a big fence or a border wall?
No.
Population 33,500. Chance of being a victim, only 1 in 389. Maybe everybody has a gun there.
Long Beach, is that on the island?
That's what it, well, it says here,
Long
next
island?
To New York, major city nearby New York.
Yeah, I think Long Beach is on, no.
It's Long Beach is a little different from Long Island, right?
No, I think it's on Long Island.
Yeah, oh, okay, I got it. Okay. Ed, I know you. I wouldn't know the town either, but you want to guess the state where the very safest?
You know what? Let's go North Carolina.
Okay, roll the drum. It's Massachusetts, Franklin, Massachusetts, near Boston. Your chance of being hurt or a victim, 1 in 524. They got about 34,000 people. So you want to be safe, go to Franklin, Massachusetts. All right, my friends, we thank you for being with us. We will be back Friday. In the meantime, remember, freedom works.